So the title of the talk is Understanding Security Implications of Using Containers in the Cloud. And this work is done while I was at IBM. Since I submitted a paper, my affiliation has changed. So the container cloud, I'm sure all of you have noticed that recently the container has become a hot topic in the industry. So most of the major players in the industry are offering container cloud services. I'm sorry if I missed out any of them, please let me know after the talk. But they offer different type of capabilities and their scopes are different, but they're being popular. They're becoming a very important business for them. The reason for this popularity of the container cloud services, probably the first and the foremost reason is probably the speed. It allows you to rapidly deploy your applications and reduce the time to market. And there are other benefits like convenience, portability, just pick and drop and run without any modifications to the environments. And also, finally, the resource utilizations. We're not without any challenges. The biggest concern probably is still the security. So we're in the security and privacy session, so I should say this is the biggest concern. Luckily, in reality, this is the biggest concern currently in the industry. Other challenges include something like guaranteeing the isolation between container instances so that a failure of one container does not bring down the physical host. Other challenges also include complexities, dealing with the complexities in the management. You have a higher density of the entities and you have to do a better job of monitoring. I mentioned that the biggest concern is the security. So people have built many tools, especially scanning tools that scans your containers or images and discovers any vulnerabilities. Some of the tools include like Vulnerability Advisor, Twistlock, Amazon Inspectors. The list is very long and it grows. It grows so rapidly that it's difficult to even keep track of it. It's all good that you can use these tools and run these tools for your images and containers and you can make things secure, and that's wonderful. But what is lacking is actually, in our opinion, a big picture of what the overall security state or security posture is of the container clouds. There has been a bits and pieces of blogs and some web pages that shows you some part of it, but we haven't actually seen the in-depth analysis of the overall security postures. So in this talk and in this work, we are trying to deliver exactly that. So the goal is to share our findings of the security aspects of the actual production container clouds. And by doing that, I hope that we can also promote the discussions and also allow other people to bring their data so we can compare and gain even better knowledge of the overall security postures of the container clouds. So I want to remind you that it is not our goal of this work to introduce another scanning tools. Although we believe the tool that we have used deserves a better attention. Probably this will be introduced in some other venues. So I'll just briefly touch upon the data pipeline that we have used, just enough so that we can understand the following materials. So our data pipeline, at the highest conceptual level, we take the data from two sources. One is from the container images here. When user pushes an image, it goes to the registry. Our image scanning tool pulls the image and runs what is called a crawler. Its full name is an agentless crawler. And what it does is it scans the images and generates a large amount of different type of data, and the data type includes things like files, list of files, list of attributes of the files, packages installed in the images, and the operating system distro names, major, minor versions, some Docker-specific informations like Docker inspect, Docker history, and so on. So these data are generated and fed into the next stage. On the other side, we also collect the data from the live containers. We have this agentless crawler running per physical host, not the per containers. And we generate the same type of data, and these are all fed into the next stage, the annotation stage. This is an overly simplified picture, but in the middle, the focus is we call these annotators. The reason is because we kind of process the data that are generated by the crawler and then convert them, or we annotate that, annotated into a higher level information. So that's why we call an annotator. We have two type of annotators that we used for this analysis. One is the compliance annotator, another is a vulnerability annotator. We have different type of annotators, but we haven't used that for this work. And I'll be talking about both compliance and vulnerability annotators in the following slides, but they generate JSON documents and eventually it gets persisted into the backend storage. So the compliance annotation. The compliance annotation is actually a set of policy or rules that you want to check against some images or containers. Some of the examples include things like maximum password age must be 90 days, minimum password length must be 8, and so on. There are different categories, like at the top it says password restrictions category. Another thing is a file system integrity. It tells you what the permission of the directory should be, whether the certain directory should exist or not, things like that. At the bottom we see SSH related rules. These are of particular importance to us because we were very much interested in these SSH related vulnerabilities. I'll be talking about these three SSH related rules in the following slides. These set of about 26 plus rules have been derived from the IBM internal compliance rules that IBM has used to check against their VMs, physical machines, and containers. Like, we have added some new rules specifically for the containers as well. So this compliance annotator has these logics for checking all these rules, and it takes in input data, like list of files, attributes, configurations, list of packages, and then it generates a JSON document that says, that gives you many informations, but the most important one would be whether it's compliant or not. It gives you compliance ID and whether it's compliant or not. So that's the core of the compliance annotator. Vulnerability annotations, it's mainly checking. Its job is to check the package vulnerabilities. It checks whether some of the packages that are installed in the images have any vulnerabilities. It takes in some external information sources like Ubuntu Security Notice, USN, CentOS Security Alerts, and so on. So they grab those external information, and then it also looks into a list of installed packages. We combine them, compare them, and then we can tell whether this image has vulnerable packages or not. It generates a similar kind of JSON outputs like this shown here. I have highlighted those two red lines. It gives you the number of vulnerable packages, and it also gives you the vulnerabilities inside. Those two are two different independent informations. One package might have multiple vulnerabilities. One vulnerability may span over multiple packages. So these are the brief summary of the tools we have used. So the data that we have analyzed is taken from the year 2016 and from January to October. For image scanning data, we scan image and live containers both. Now for image scanning, we used the entire duration of 2016, not entire, but January to October. For the live scanning of the live containers, we used the data for the October of 2016, and we collected data from two different sites. So for the container image scanning, you need to employ a image scanning to maintain the safety, security of the container clouds. The main reason is for the containers, there's an issue with the unknown pedigree. If you remember the way that people create the container images, they just pull the images from the Docker Hub, for example, modify and push it. Many people do this, repeat this process. So when you download something, you don't know what's inside and what people has done to the images. So there are some vulnerabilities hiding inside. Even if you know some of the histories, like Docker history gives you the modifications that were made, just by looking at them, it doesn't tell you what the vulnerabilities might be. So you need the tools. But other than that, there is even more a reason to employ the image scanning, and it's because what I call the vulnerability amplification effect. Some people might make some small modification, introduce a small vulnerability. Next people makes another modification, but without them knowing, those two has a synergy effect, and it suddenly becomes a huge vulnerabilities. So we have observed that. I'll be explaining that in the case study, the following case study. So we ran these tools, and we have collected a huge amount of information, summaries, and data. I'm just showing you some pieces of them. We have top 5 compliance violations, and then also some of the trends on the right-hand side. These are the trends of the vulnerability counts. There are much to talk about these, but the point I want to make here is that the simple scanning may not be sufficient, and according to what we have found, you actually have to look at the data as a whole, not just the individual scanning data of individual containers or images. And the Phylon case shows you why it is. So in this case study, just focus on these list of the container image names on the right-hand side. I have anonymized the name, so you won't be able to find this name in the real Docker Hub. But I don't know if you notice anything interesting here. Let me highlight it for you. These are the images that were discovered in one day that had that were considered to be the highly vulnerable. It violated all three SSH related rules. But if I highlight this, there are just way too many my app server names, and they all belong to different owners. The middle part between these slashes, you can consider them as an owner names. But somehow it looks like somehow it's coordinated. How can these all different users suddenly create this containers that has the same name? So we were puzzled by this, and we started investigating. To cut the long story short, it turned out this was on some online course. So the scenario was such that this instructor was advertising this image. And then the student was downloading and then creating an instance of these from this vulnerable images. So that's why we had suddenly so many of these vulnerable containers running amok in the container cloud. There were some interesting details. I don't know if I have it. I'll just skip the details. But the point is that how we discovered this is by looking at the list of all of them. I don't have a very good solution for doing this aggregate analysis, but the point I want to make is we need to look at the scanning results as a whole and do some processing, not just by individual, not just focus on the individual scanning results to discover these. So these might be some interesting future directions. So if you have this good scanning tools, it's good. You have a safe images. But what if your live container is somehow modified while it is running? Then all the live scanning results are invalid. The answer to was: is there any activity that where people just actually log into the live instances and directly make changes to the containers? This is actually, well, I'm not saying you should follow this, but this is the idea. There's an immutability practice where you should treat these containers as an immutable object and you don't directly modify it to support the better DevOps paradigms. So the question we wanted to find out is whether there's such changes, in-place changes, so-called the drifts, and that we have found interesting results. So to give you a better understanding of drift, let's assume this is the image lifecycle, first version, second, third, fourth version. People have pushed it. And then we scan multiple times. I'll talk about why we scan so many times offline if you're interested. We create the inst container, and then the container lifecycle begins, but we compare these two points, and we compare the scan results of these two points, and we call them drift if they are different. So the point, the result is that there does exist a drift at the magnitude of about 5%, 3%, a little different between sites. But most of them are, you can see that most of them are vulnerable drifts. There are small amounts of compliance drifts. So drifts exist. And the larger portions are the vulnerability drifts. This means that the number of vulnerable packages have changed since the image became a container. But more drift does not mean that it's less secure. The drift just means that there are more changes. Even if there's no drift, the cloud may be less secure. There's also a direction of the drift. The drift may not only increase as the image becomes container, but it can also, we discover that it also decreases. So this, we don't have a direct proof, but we strongly believe that the reduction of the number of drift means that the people actually go in, log in, and make manual changes to it, whether it's whether it's a good change or bad change. So there were a small number of these reduction of the drifts, both for the compliance and the vulnerabilities. So we call some of them benign if well, I'll be talking about this later, but the point is there were these changes in both directions, up and down. We focused on the SSH rules. We found out, we did some a deeper analysis. There are many different type of drifts. The one that's colored as red is what we call a bad drift. It actually increases the vulnerabilities. If you read a few of them, it's the password becomes weak. SSH gets installed. We don't want the SSH to be installed. So these are what we call a disruptive bad drifts. But the ones at the bottom, there's also a case where people actually fix their containers manually. They make passwords stronger. They remove SSH server packages and so on. So we see all kind of different drifts happening. These were interesting to actually have a proof of these drifts' existence. So why does a drift happen? There are many reasons, actually. We were surprised that there were so many different reasons. One of them might be because it's not your fault, but because the vulnerable package list gets increased. It's an external definition of the vulnerable packages, but Ubuntu or Fedora, all these organizations, they keep adding the number of discovered vulnerable packages. So even if you do nothing, your image becomes more vulnerable each day. So this is a natural decay of vulnerabilities. There are other things like some automated updates, some implementation changes, so the result changes. Sometimes there might be some system anomaly, so that your result looks like there is a drift. But these are, all of them are classified as benign drifts, but there are disruptive drifts where people actually manually log in using either SSH or Docker.exec. They go in and do apt-get install or something like that. So these are undesirable changes. We want to avoid these kind of changes at all costs. So these are some of the drifts that we have, the reasons for the drifts we have discovered. So in conclusion, we looked at various interesting aspects of the real production container clouds in terms of the security aspects. We have learned many things, but among those interesting things are that there is a vulnerability amplification effect, and looks like we need more aggregate processing of the scan results to discover some root cause, real, true root cause of the vulnerabilities. Also, in the production cloud, there was we discovered there is actually real drifts that, and then we have a proof that people actually go in and make changes directly. So, so we believe that this is static scanning, and then the live scanning must be accompanied together to have the higher level of maintain the higher level of security. This concludes my talk, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Do we have time for a quick question or two? I think while people are getting up to the mic, I'll ask one. One of the things that I noticed in the recommendations was you had recommendations about password expiry policies and things like this. Mm-hmm. And I know that NIST and others have sort of changed their minds about password expiry policies. And I know that necessarily, like a big organization like IBM might take more time to do this and things. But I guess what I'd like to try to disentangle here is what percent over all of the vulnerabilities were things that you would say were absolutely uniformly, regardless of your interpretation of password length policies or other policies like this, absolutely vulnerabilities, such as people setting SSH authentication with the password password.
So, did I understand? I don't know if I understood the question correctly. So, what's the real vulnerabilities that are independent of those parameter settings of those?
So for instance, you had this nice breakout where you said that there are certain things that you consider highly vulnerable, mm-hmm. and in those cases, those were cases where people violated SSH rules that are SANE rules. So I was curious overall in terms of what percent of the violations that you found. I noticed that the top three things you had were password policies that some organizations, if for instance they automatically generate 7-character random values that people are expected to remember, maybe that's not, you know, with a 180 day expiry policy, then maybe that's not actually such a bad thing overall in some environments or situations. So I was wondering which things are sort of universal that you're looking at.
I don't know if I have enough data, but at least from what we have seen, I think I've also shown you the password is particularly was a very universal vulnerabilities around. And also the second one was the SSH related ones. Containers, we didn't want to have the SSH, but nonetheless people have the SSH servers running in the containers. They use it like a VM. So these two are very universal for the containers.
Trishan?
Hi, Trishan from NYU, where I work with Justin, where we work at CoreOS and Docker to secure distribution container images. I have two questions for you. Sorry, I missed the early parts of your talk. But I noticed that your paper mentions CoreOS Claire, which is an open source product to scan container images. Did you use that as part of the evaluation, or did you use one of your own?
We use our scanning tool is also open sourced. But we use our own IBM created scanning tools.
Ah, I see. So could you then talk a little bit about the similarities or differences between the two?
Similarities with other tools? Well, I would say I think there are many overlaps with existing tools. I've seen the Amazon Inspector part, but I guess you're interested in the CoreOS. I don't know much about those, but many things overlap. Most of the existing products, non-IBM products, they focus mainly on the discovering the vulnerable packages. But what we have done is we also have this compliance checking that are some of the policies, rules set by the organizations. I haven't seen that many tools that does that. There's probably some tools, OpenSCAP tools that allows you to define your own rules. Amazon Inspector has a very similar kind of compliance rules, like password must be something. Surprisingly, Amazon had the very similar rules, but probably that's about it. Most of other things just focus on the discovering vulnerable packages.
I see, thanks, that's very helpful. And the other question is, could you go back to the previous slide? So you're saying that a disruptive drift is caused by automated software updates that do what, I'm sorry? That they update, don't software updates fix problems?
Well, they can automatically go in and make some changes to configurations.
That goes against your predefined rules. I see.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. We should talk more. Thank you. Great talk. Very important topic.
Thank you.